Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
It's been 1 year since George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Graphic footage of his death resonated deeply here in the Commonwealth, sparking protests, driving forward police reform bills, challenging every community to confront a history of racism. A year later, stuttering progress and so much pain remains. Still, Boston NAACP President Tanisha Sullivan says she believes in the potential of the protests over the past year to create transformation.
Transform into public policy solutions that are designed to really root out systemic racism. And most importantly, I am hopeful that the public policy will turn into practice.
Marking 12 months since Floyd's murder, the Boston Globe's Janae Osterholt penned a column that reflects that year back to us unflinchingly. It's pain, our journey, our failures, and what we have left to do. And we wanted to talk to her about it. Janae, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Janae, I appreciate you joining us. You know, I was originally thinking maybe I should ask you to kind of summarize your column, but it almost seems like it takes every word you wrote to get the complexity of what you're trying to capture and of this past year. Tell us about your process of writing that column.
You know, it really turned me inside out, to be honest. I've been covering BLM since its inception, and that's more than half my career now. And it really does chip away at your spirit to live it and also have to kind of write and process it in real time. And the idea that George Floyd was going to be memorialized in a way that is almost reflective, like that is trying to be MLK Day, that is really trying to like make him a martyr and paint him as a sacrificial lamb, was incredibly hard, especially because people were dying and being murdered before him, and people have been murdered since him. Someone was murdered the day of the trial, and you know, many times since that verdict was announced, and it was just hurtful. I revisited W.E.B. Du Bois' Strivings of the Negro People, which was written, you know, over 100 years ago, and is still incredibly relevant today. And in that piece, he talks about the unasked question of our people, which is what is it like to be a problem? And, you know, he talks about the veil and double consciousness and just all the ways in which this country is determined to see us in such a way. And I kind of just felt my way through the writing.
What should we do instead of making George Floyd a martyr or turning this moment into another MLK Day?
I mean, I think it starts with recognizing that this is not MLK Day and that he was not MLK. He was not a person risking their lives for civil rights in a movement. He, you know, MLK was assassinated and George Floyd was lynched, and they're both horrible things, but I think that we need to be able to talk about the killings of unarmed Black people by police officers and systemic racism without trying to, as Ron Harris so beautifully put it, you know, make him someone who's dying on a cross for our sins, because he is not. You know, we can't just move on, and we also can't sit up here and act like it's progress. Being, you know, are we really going to say that, you know, we had to, just the fact that we watched a man die that way so gratuitously over and over, you know, hundreds of times this last year. And that's what it took for people to just talk about racism. And the president can't even like wrap his mind around defunding the police. He's giving more money to police. You know, we have to be willing to admit that this country is trapped in its own supremacy and capitalism and just disgusting oppression, and stop looking for quick fixes and feel-good band-aids. And I think we love to do that. We love to have short memories and delight in short-term progress versus talking about dismantling a system and what it takes to reimagine and rebuild an actual free and equitable society.
You talked about how long you've been writing and reporting in this space, and you talked about the fact that it kind of turned you inside out to have to write this one. Was there a moment where you thought, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to write about this anymore. I can't. And if there was that moment, where did you find the strength to do it anyway?
Absolutely. There was a moment. There were several moments. It took me 10 days to write this piece, and not to write, but just 10 days of anxiety and just thinking and like thinking about that essay that, you know, Du Bois wrote over 100 years ago and how it could still stand today. Like, it's still just as relevant. And having anxiety because I'm always worried about how my community will feel about what I'm saying and how I'm saying it. And I never want to let them down or just get it wrong. And, you know, we're all humans and sometimes we get it wrong. And, you know, I found the strength from my friend Christopher, actually. I was telling him, I don't think I can do this. And I was having a meltdown and he was like, you can do this. He was like, this is who you are. This is what you do. If you were called to do this, you stand in your light, you stand in your energy. And it kind of pushed me forward. And it, you know, he reminded me of what I created with A Beautiful Resistance, which was created after I went to George Floyd's funeral in Minneapolis.
It's your series, just for our listeners who may not know the series in the Boston Globe.
Yeah, it's a series celebrating Black life and Black joy, because I needed to offer something that showed us not dead, that showed us vibrant and alive and celebrated our joy and our expansiveness beyond brutalization. But yeah, his reminder, his call to action is what helped me find the strength to write the piece.
You talked a minute ago about, my words, not yours, not glossing over the murder of George Floyd in this moment. And you wrote in your essay, you wrote about a quote from Ron Harris, who's the chief resilience officer of Minneapolis, in which he says that the Derek Chauvin verdict essentially made white people feel, quote, like they were vindicated in that moment and relieved to move on, end quote. Your article challenges white America that we can't just move on, that was a moment, as we heard from the attorney general in Minnesota, of accountability, but not justice.
Yeah, we cannot mistake this rare gasp of accountability for justice. It is not justice. Justice is us never having to fight for this stuff in the first place. We're literally fighting for basic human decency. Like, that's insane. There's no justice in that. Justice can never be served to that family or any of these families. Because justice would be these victims being alive. That would be justice. If you hear a crazy sound in the background, my dog has gotten a hold of one of her toys. But
I am pro canine in all interviews. So you just go right ahead.
But it's I understand why people want to move on. I do. And I understand why they want to celebrate when things like the Chauvin verdict happened. But we still don't know how many years he's going to get. You know, there's so many things we don't know. And we've seen how these things can go wrong in the past. And for me, it's like, we can't just gloss over the murder. We can't afford to accept the murder of George Floyd as an isolated event. And I think what Ron Harris was trying to get at is that a lot of people kind of, white people, but other people too, I think they kind of looked at that like this isolated moment. So they joined their book clubs and tried to read their way out of racism and got their participation ribbons for the protest. And then when he was found guilty, they were like, oh yay, we did it. We won racism. And it's like, no, we didn't. We didn't win racism. This is still happening every day. And there's so many names you don't even know. And the fact that it wasn't until after George Floyd was murdered that we even talked about Breonna Taylor, who was murdered 2 months beforehand, is a travesty in itself. And it's something that we continue to see happen. You know, there are more trans people being murdered at disgustingly high numbers, and we just never even learn their names. They literally are living in their own violent epidemic that we refuse to even fight for or acknowledge. We are in so many different intersecting points of trauma and oppression that we just can't afford to look at these things as isolated events. Like, we have to fight for collective liberation.
I'm going to have to end us there. I will look forward to talking with you again soon, I hope. Boston Globe columnist Janae Osterholt, thanks for sharing with us today, and thanks for the article, for the piece.
Thank you.